required organ donation course for nurses, good home care and readmission, nursing education experience and a length of stay, and we'll bring you another special segment from the NACHO Preparedness Summit on public health digital disease detection tools. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's the Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show, the podcast for nurses by nurses. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for checking out the program this week. First up in this week's nursing news, we'll be looking at how good quality home care and nursing experience prevents hospital readmission and limits the length of stay. Then in our tip segment for the week, we'll have a special segment from the NACHO Preparedness Summit covering new digital disease detection tools nurses in the public health arena are using to get the jump on pandemics and other health events. That's coming up later on in this episode. Before we get on to the news, though, I do want to make sure you follow up on the information you get in this and every other episode by heading over to nursingshow.com. When you get there, you can check out the links in each episode's show notes. And of course, there are other articles and links there to things like the free Nursing Show mobile app, student nurse tips, and a whole lot more. But I want to make sure you follow up to understand how the show is applied to your own nursing scope of practice. If you want to get back in touch with me, you can drop me an email. Send them in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, and I will respond back to every email that comes in. So send me links to news items you'd like me to cover, or maybe an idea for a future episode. Whatever the case may be, keep those emails coming in. And if you're going to be in Denver for the American Association of Critical Care Nurses National Teaching Institute Conference next week, I'll be there, and I want you to hook up with me. So catch up with me there. I'm there courtesy of Physiocontrol, and I'll be covering all the new research and hot trends to come out of that exhibit hall while I'm there. So I hope we can catch up. I'll have some more contact information coming up later on in this episode, but let's go ahead and get on into this week's news items coming right up. First up in the news this week is a story about a New Jersey law called the HERO Act, focusing on the importance of organ donation. One of the aspects of the law that affects nurses is the requirement that they have to take a mandatory organ and tissue donation and recovery continuing education course. It's affecting nursing school curriculums in the state and also makes sure that nurses are integral to the success or failure of organ donations. One of the organ registries stated that nurses make the initial call 95% of the time, and they say that it's a nurse-driven process. The mandated courses for all nurses licensed in the state of New Jersey has to be completed by May 31st of this year. There are online versions of the course, including one over at nurse.com that I have linked to in this article. But if you know someone that's practicing in the state of New Jersey, or you do, you might want to make sure you get follow up on this. Also, it's not a bad idea for all of us to think about organ donation and how nurses are actively involved in encouraging patients and their families to be organ donors and to donate organs when it's appropriate. We've seen an increase in organ donations in New Jersey since the law went into effect back in 2008, and maybe you can affect a similar surge in your area for organ donation. Next up in the news is a look at how we can use a multidisciplinary care team approach to managing homebound patients and reducing readmissions and length of stay when they do get admitted. Researchers at Hofstra University in New York presented on their Advanced Illness Management, or AIM, program at a recent Society of General Internal Medicine meeting. According to the study, the goal of the team approach is to reduce the so-called frailty gap in patients who are homebound for multiple complicated comorbid conditions. The patients in the study, while accounting for only about 5% of the healthcare system population, accounted for 50% of the money spent in healthcare. The program's goals are to change the number of hospital admissions, reduce length of stay, improve patient care, team communications, and patient satisfaction. Also, they want to improve medication adherence. The study's authors reduced hospital readmissions by 37% during the course of their study and limited length of stay to by 1.5 days. Now, the program includes a group of nurses, social workers, physicians, and others coming together and working together to help these patients out. Because of the progressive nature of these patients and their chronic illnesses, they got more sick during the course of the study, but they still were able to reduce readmissions and length of stay, which says a lot about what this team approach could be doing. And it could do a lot to change the revolving door way of care at a lot of hospitals. Make sure you check out the link in the show notes for this study and the article, and let me know if your hospital system is doing something similar. Maybe I can share it on a future episode of The Nursing Show. Remember, you can always email me here at nursingshow@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Finally, a look at an article that covers the economics of healthcare and how nurse experience and education affects patient care and specifically the length of stay. The study was recently published in the American Economic Journal, Applied Economics. The researchers from Columbia University Business School in New York looked at how nurses' time on a unit affected how long patients stayed in that unit in the hospital. They equated the retention of nurses on staff long-term as an investment in what they called human capital, equating nurses to an important piece of hospital operations. They pointed to similar units in Veterans Affairs hospitals. They have longer unit tenures there, and they said they're saving $20,000 per nurse compared to units in civilian hospitals. Now, they looked at units of all sorts, med-surg, tele-units, ICU units, and they measured the length of stay for the patients on those units, and they found that nurse staffing and experience had the greatest effect on the length of stay. Things that lowered length of stay on the units included less overtime hours, shifting nurses frequently to different units, a lot of things like that. Now, I urge you to take a look at this article. Maybe you're doing something like this as well in your hospital or looking at this. But shoot me an email and let me know, and maybe I can share something about what you're doing in a future episode. I look forward to hearing from you. I recently attended the National Association of County and City Health Officials, the NACHO Preparedness Summit recently, with the ProMed Network podcast studio. While I was there in one of the segments, I sat down with a group of experts in pandemic preparedness and detection to talk about digital tools and how they're being used to detect the next pandemic or public health event in communities around the country. Joining me on the panel are Jack Herman, Senior Advisor and Chief of Public Health Programs at NACHO, Karen Smith, a health officer for Napa County, California Health Department, and Jennifer Olson, the Manager of Pandemics at the SCOLE Global Threats Fund. They chat with me about how systems, early detection tools in the digital health arena are protecting our communities, populations. Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to welcome all of you to this program. We are here again with another segment from the Preparedness Summit. We're brought in by our good friends at NACHO, and this is an opportunity for you to learn about other things going on in healthcare and preparedness specifically with regard to healthcare. So I want you to check out what we're going to be talking about, because we're going to be talking about digital disease detection, right? Correct. And that's going to be something that people are going to go, what exactly does that mean? Are we talking about computer viruses? No, we're not. Jack, first of all, I want to tell you this is an awesome conference. You guys have done a great job. I've heard nothing but positive buzz from the attendees going by, and everyone seems very excited about the sessions and the education and the materials they're taking back to their local health departments.
Well, thank you. It's been just a great opportunity to be here in Atlanta and have people from all over the country joining us again this year. It's a conference that's full of a lot of energy. People here are very committed and passionate to the work that they do in public health departments across the country, so we're excited to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your background and what you do, because you're with NACHO.
I am. I'm the Senior Advisor in Chief of Public Health Programs, and so I oversee a variety of portfolios in addition to preparedness, public health informatics, environmental health, and a variety of other topic areas.
So when we talk about digital health and digital disease detection, What exactly does that mean? Why is that such an important topic here at this event?
Well, this was an important issue to bring to this conference in particular because we're always looking for innovative ways and using technology to help us do our work better at the local level, at the state level, and certainly at the national level. Finding ways quickly to detect when there might be something out there that's going to impact the health of a community is really important to know right away so that the public health sector and the healthcare sector can act on that and hopefully mitigate that disease or virus that happens to be emerging in that community.
Okay. Karen, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background and what you're doing with this process of detecting disease.
So my name is Karen Smith. I am the public health officer for Napa County in California and have been working for a long time with NACHO on preparedness activities. Love these conferences. They're one of the highlights of my working life. I had the opportunity and the honor to actually facilitate a session yesterday on digital disease detection, where we had three presentations from local health officials like myself on what they're doing, three very different things, both large, small, and medium-sized jurisdictions. So it was a really good opportunity to hear those stories, which stimulated a tremendous amount of really interesting discussion from the rest of the audience. About 50 other attendees were there to really talk about what are our opportunities, what are our challenges, next steps, and to really begin what I think is going to be a much longer term conversation about how we use these technologies.
Jennifer, how about yourself? Introduce yourself and tell us about what your organization is doing to address this.
Sure. So my name is Jennifer Olson. I'm the manager of pandemics at SCUL Global Threats Fund. We're a small foundation in California that works on a number of global threats. The one I'm here to talk about is pandemics, which is key to preparedness activities. And we're interested in engaging people in digital disease detection, whether it be through using new social technologies like Twitter or Facebook, people's searching of the web and understanding the patterns of search to tell us that something is going on, there's an outbreak potentially in a neighborhood, in an area. Because if we can find outbreaks faster, then we can end the risk of pandemics.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating when you take a look at the emergence of Facebook and other social media, how we can use that in a real-time way to identify particular illnesses that might be emerging in a community. So somebody goes out to a restaurant, they come back home, they begin to feel sick, and they're immediately telling all of their friends and family on Facebook. That might be the precursor to a foodborne illness. And so it's fascinating to think about the ways we can use technology to be able to help us hone in on some of these emerging threats.
And so one of the key things that we're seeing is there's a lot of research about how all these tools and data sources can be used, but there's not a great deal of understanding of practice and how to implement this in a place maybe with low or limited resources, how a smaller or even large health department that doesn't have a huge infrastructure can use these technologies to improve their daily work. And so that's what's really exciting about engaging with NACHO is to see how can it become part of life.
Right. It's actually, it's an absolutely fascinating and really promising practice because many of us don't have we don't have a lot of IT capability and we don't have any money. That's sort of a chronic condition, if you will, for public health. But what most of us rely on now is people get sick enough to go to a doctor. In fact, usually people get sick enough to go to an emergency room. That's pretty much the only time we hear about stuff. And you can imagine that's pretty late in the game. These technologies give us the opportunity to also interact directly with, not just to passively monitor Twitter and Facebook and other technology platforms, but also to actually engage in asking questions. Are you, in an ongoing way, are you having any of the following symptoms? And also pushing out information and receiving back feedback from large groups of people just hasn't been something we've been able to do in the past.
Yeah, we had a group on earlier, a discussion about social media and its powerful impact in preparedness and in disaster response because people are tweeting that their house just caved in. Before they, sometimes before they call 911, they're on there, oh my gosh, I'm in my closet and I can't get out because the door's blocked shut. Well, this is how sometimes they find that people are in trouble.
Yeah, right. It was certainly an interesting use of social media during Hurricane Sandy, when a number of agencies who are in the response business were monitoring social media to find out where the most need was. So people would be tweeting or writing on their Facebook, you know, we have no diapers, we have no water, we need, you know, X. And those agencies who are monitoring that in real time were able then to isolate those areas of the community and be able to immediately respond to those needs, where it might have in the past taken days to find that information.
Because you'd have to send somebody in there, they'd have to do a survey and needs assessment, and then come back out and report from all the different areas, well, here are our needs assessments, whereas you can do that in real time. Yeah.
And I think many health departments were a little leery of social media at the beginning. In fact, there were policies restricting employees from using social media. They had their IT systems locked down from being able to access some of those websites. And then all of a sudden they realized, wait a minute, we can use this as a public health tool. And now are creating programs to monitor social media so they can identify public health issues in real time as quickly as possible and respond to them.
I think some of the early hesitancy was also around how, quote unquote, reliable was this information. And the truth is that the types of activities that we're talking about don't really require sort of, I'm going to publish this in the New England Journal of Medicine level of reliability. Right. We're looking for trends, we're looking for changes, we're looking for clustering of similar signals. And that's stuff that we know how to do in other settings. We just haven't done it with large groups of humans in the past. So it's very exciting.
It's a different type of communication. I often say to organizations that I consult with on social media is, you wouldn't refuse to answer your helpline or your phone. This is just another phone. You know, it's somebody saying, I have this problem out loud. And you're right, it's no less or more reliable than anybody reporting a symptom.
Exactly.
You know, you have to take it all with a grain of salt and introduce, mix it in with your assessment of other things, but you ultimately have to take that at face value.
There's some really, I think one of the most interesting programs, which I'm embarrassed to admit I wasn't aware about, of is Skoll's Flu Near You program, which is actually can be used at any time, and I think makes a nice platform to actually scale that up for unexpected events. Mm-hmm. Flu Near You, correct me please if I'm wrong, but allows a health department to sort of enroll people in the community who want to engage in this activity and send out a query on a regular basis as flu season comes up. Ask, are you having any of the following symptoms? People can reply back, yes, no. And then monitor that over time. One of the challenges we have with influenza is because most people don't get sick enough to go to the hospital, is that we're late. And we're late with our messaging about, you know, the important things people need to do to protect themselves. You have to time it right, or they listen. If you're early, they don't listen to you. If you're late, it's too late. And so this is another really exciting tool. It also engages people in the public health process. We're desperate for ways to get people, especially younger people, to understand that what we're doing is not only important, but fun and exciting. And so giving people an opportunity to participate in the process, I think, will have a lot of benefits in the long run.
I think we often say, you know, there's an app for that, for almost everything you can imagine. How can public health engage in hopping onto that opportunity with people that may or may not even know what a public health department is or that there is one in their community? Many people have, there's a lot of myths around what the flu is. And so how can we kind of use these technologies that are becoming so pervasive in people's lives to engage them in a topic that's going to help the community as a whole?
And I think you can see then why this was an important topic to have at this conference, because we wanted to know how were public health departments, healthcare facilities, and others using this type of technology in their communities, and more importantly, wanting to make others aware that they could use this technology in their community to do some of these very important surveillance kinds of activities.
Mm-hmm. So have you figured out some best practices for that digital surveillance yet? I mean, I know it's very early stages. You're really just starting to look at the possibilities and how you search for things on Twitter and Facebook and other avenues. But are you starting to see some things emerge?
Well, if I may, I think there are a couple of themes. There's the how do you use this to sort of passively monitor what's going on, to detect what issues are out there. And that's there are some really interesting examples. New York City's identified two or three foodborne outbreaks that they didn't actually know were ongoing by just sort of watching what was happening. But then there's that whole category of interactive tools, which are the ones that I find really interesting, engaging the community in that conversation. And I think flu near you is actually a really, really good example, because then you tie it to other things that are available, like the national database of where flu shots are available, so that when people come onto the website, they also can go immediately and say, oh, and I can go here to get my flu shot. Maybe it really is time. Mm-hmm. That's how we can make things much more convenient for people. You're much more likely to do something if it's right there on the screen next to you or one click away than if you have to stop, remember to go back, oh yeah, I should find out where the flu vaccine is. It's too hard. I'll do it tomorrow. So there's those additional little add-ons, I think, are really exciting. That, for me, that's a best practice. And I'm going to go back and actually see if we can bring that up for next flu season in Napa.
Yeah. And Nature is also working on some tools with the CDC and looking at ways to use text messages in an effort to ensure that individuals are being compliant with their flu vaccine or compliant with their medication, or identify whether they may have symptoms or specific kinds of symptoms to help us track and trace the extent of the virus in a community in the case of a pandemic. So I think there's some very exciting practices that are beginning to emerge, and I think time will tell as to how pervasive those can be and how helpful those might be in the case of an influenza pandemic.
I also think it's important for the public and for healthcare practitioners to understand that we're not doing this without paying very close attention to privacy concerns. I think those are real concerns. Texting in particular with patients, because people's texts aren't necessarily secure, there's an issue sometimes even, or our tech security people are concerned that just people responding to us and inadvertently identify themselves as, say, patients with a sexually transmitted infection, that sort of thing, by virtue of that communication. My feeling, and from what I'm hearing from my colleagues, is we'll get around those issues. We will find ways to both protect privacy but also use these tools. But it does take a little bit more time than just, pulling out everybody's cell phone and starting randomly texting your patients.
I also think Nature just published a free guide to a number of ways social media can be used in health departments.
Excellent.
And I think that's really exciting to start to see this work go from, there's a lot of people in op centers who are working on how to do it, but to see some ideas actually coming together in a written way. So if you were a health department that's I kind of want to get there, I'm just not sure of some of the steps. We are working with some counties on Flu Near You, creating kind of a cheat sheet for how to implement the tools like that in your community. I think that will be really helpful, even from engaging people in health departments, for them to engage their leadership. Right. One of the biggest challenges that comes up with any new tool that a health department wants to try out or get into their practice is people being like, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure you should, how can we add this to our plate? But when there's an example that you can say, look here, this county did it, here's the things I need to do, there's been some thinking around privacy, there's been some thinking about what we're not going to try and do. That's really important.
I keep hearing that theme from all of the people that we've had up here, and Jack, this is a testament to Nature, is when we ask them for where we can find more resources about a topic, at least one of the panelists will say, and of course, you can find all of this stuff over at nature.org, where there are just all of these resources for public health officials, which is what you want to do. I mean, that's ultimately what your goal is.
That's
our
service.
It's great to hear that people seem to be really accessing that information and utilizing it.
Yeah, I think, we do a lot of work in developing tools and resources that we hope will be helpful. And so when we come to conferences like this and we hear directly from our members and our partners that they're actually using those tools, it does. It's very gratifying, makes us feel good that the work that we are doing, we know, is ultimately being helpful in the field. So we appreciate that.
Fantastic. Well, we could probably keep talking about this for quite a while. This conversation has rolled along really well, but we have to stop, and maybe we can pick up at a future conference and event sometime to talk about this and see how those best practices have started to develop in a future topic. But Jennifer and Jack and Karen, I just want to thank you all for being here on the show, and I want to thank all of you for checking this out. Again, if you want to find some of these incredible resources, head over to nacho.org. That's nacho.org, and you will find all kinds of public health resources available for you there. I'm Jamie Davis. I'll be back with more segments from the Preparedness Summit, thanks to our friends at NACHO, coming up soon. That's going to close out this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank all of you for checking out the program this week. You know, make sure you are following up on the information you hear in this week's episode. You may have picked up some ideas and tidbits. Head over to The Nursing Show site at nursingshow.com and check out the show notes link right there at the top of the page. Over there, you'll find listings for all the episodes of The Nursing Show, including the most recent one, all the way back to the very first Nursing Show episode. But it's important for you to get the full information there so that you can understand how to apply what you hear on the show to your own nursing practice or studies. If you want to get back in touch with me, and I hope you do want to get back in touch with me, go ahead and shoot me an email. You can send that in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I respond back to every email that comes in, and I want to hear from you. So send me in your comments. Maybe you have a question about an episode, a suggestion, or a news link you'd like me to feature on a future episode. Whatever the thing, support the Nursing Show community and lend your input. You can also get the Nursing Show email newsletter by checking out the link on the right-hand side of the Nursing Show site. Just fill out that short form, and all of the links from each episode can be sent directly to your email inbox each week. You can also connect with me over on social media sites under the handle PodMedic. So catch me over there at twitter.com/PodMedic and over at facebook.com/PodMedic. Friend or follow me over on those sites. You can also become a member of the community over at Facebook by liking the Nursing Show Facebook page. You can find that over at facebook.com/nursingshow. Just click the like button there at the top of the page and join the conversation there. I post other nursing articles and pictures and things like that each week that don't end up in the episode, so make sure you check all of that out. That's it for me. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'll be back soon with more episodes here of The Nursing Show. It comes out here every Friday for you to wrap up your nursing week. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.